Okay, we'll call to order the July 1st, 2020 Town of Cary Beach Planning and Zoning Commission. The first item on the agenda is adoption of the agenda.
Before you do that, are you going to entertain a motion to amend to discuss encroachments into the right-of-way?
Actually, there's two. One is the discussion, this is to add to the agenda, the discussion of temporary structures in the town right-of-way. When I believe we have somebody there on the line for that. John, yes?
There should be temporary structures in setbacks and town right-of-way.
Okay, sorry, in setbacks and town right-of-way on residential properties. And then the second item is the encroachment. Mr. Eldridge, what was that other item? Is that the same item we're talking about?
I think that's the same item.
Okay.
We're just talking about temporary swimming pool that we'll
here. Yes. Okay.
That's the same item.
So that's the same item. Okay. So we're
the second item is the resignation from PNC.
Right. The second item would be officially the resignation of Mr. Bill Moore from the Planning and Zoning Commission. All right. With those changes, is there a motion to adopt the agenda?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. We have the adoption of the minutes as the next agenda item. Let's just take a minute and look over the June 3rd, 2020 minutes.
Adopt the June 3rd minutes as written. I don't see any changes in them.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Public comments. I know we have some people online. And I believe for the folks that are online for the discussion of the swimming pool, we have you as an agenda item, so that will be at a different point. But if there's anybody else online for a general public comment, please hit star 6. Okay, hearing none, we'll go to our next agenda item, which is agenda item number 5. This is the proposed text amendment to chapter 1, and I believe
chapter 9.
I'll
take that, Chairman.
Okay.
The commission might recall during last month's meeting, the chairman relayed a discussion he'd had with the property owner about the livestock regulations we adopted. Council adopted following PZC's drafting and review back in 2017. And in the course of that discussion with the property owner, the definition of exotic animals came up, and the chairman, being as thorough as he is, went into the code and couldn't find that definition anywhere. And we decided at last month's meeting that those were needed, that I would draft them and bring them to you. I was troubled by that development because there's no way I would have drafted those regulations without those definitions. So I went back into my computer files and I found the final draft that you all worked on and passed up to council did include those definitions. Hang on just a minute. So when I went into board actions and minutes, I saw where council had adopted what we proposed, including the definition. So I brought this up to staff, and we decided that because council by ordinance amended chapter 1 to include those definitions, and because that happened before we got into the self-publishing app and MuniCorp simply missed plugging those new insertions into Chapter 1, but because council had already adopted them, Beth and Mandy worked with council to put them back into 1 through the self-publishing app. But what we're doing now is taking them out of 1, which is general administration, moving them over to the livestock section in Chapter 9 so they're more user-friendly. So That's what you've got in front of you. If you take a look at the first one is chapter one, and you'll see that we struck out the livestock-related definitions, exotic animal, livestock, and livestock enclosure. And then if you go into the one for chapter nine.
Okay, can I ask a question here? Since this has already been approved, forwarded, and then approved by the town council, and the only thing was that it wasn't put in, what exactly are we, is this going to have to go back to the town council, or is this something?
I guess so.
It does for the chapter.
Council adopted them, Unicorp forgot to put them in. You couldn't find them. They adopted an ordinance back in 2017 to include the definitions in chapter one. Because they adopted that ordinance, there wasn't any need to jump through all those hoops. It was simply a clerical matter to put them back into chapter one. But as we mentioned in last month's meeting, PZC wanted to move those livestock definitions over into the livestock section. So, in a sense, this is a formal text amendment because we're deleting them from one and reinserting them into
Okay. I understand that.
We're not recreating any.
No, we're just moving it from one chapter to another chapter. That's all.
Correct. That's all.
Okay.
And that's it. So, if council, you can entertain a motion to recommend to the commission can entertain a motion to recommend the council to adopt these amendments. There's no consistency statement required. Just simple moving them from one to another.
Okay, so does anybody want to make a motion to that effect?
So moved.
So moved. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay.
Good. Thank you.
Next item on the agenda is 5.2, which is the light trespass. And we had talked about, you know, putting this into the nuisance category right here. Should point out, even though it says graffiti nuisance, I believe that the graffiti nuisance has already been passed by the town council, even though that talks about graffiti nuisance. I think we're talking about the light trespass here.
Can you go to the All right, look, the amendments are in red. So if you've got this in your agenda package, if you just go to the proposed text amendments for light trespass regulations in parentheses for July 1, 2020, The first line is the table of contents for Article 8. So when everybody's got that in front of them, we'll proceed. Have you got that?
Yes.
So Chairman, before I go into my presentation, you'll see that in the table of contents, what's blue is not changed, and there is graffiti nuisance in blue.
Right.
The amendment is a new provision.
I was just looking at the agenda where it kept saying graffiti, graffiti, graffiti down on the agenda.
Okay, that's
fine. So I was just a little confused on that, so, okay.
Well, I doubt that you were as confused as I was in drafting these things. This was a very challenging assignment. It was challenging for several reasons. One, I had to kind of glean out of the original proposal that Commissioner Garceau put together what the main points were and figure out how we could expand upon those and also deal with some of the issues that the original proposal contained. For example, the original proposal put a lot of emphasis on regulating glare. The glare is too variable a physiological sensation to regulate even by a black and white definition. Another, and Garceau, I'm not picking on you, I'm just kind of making some points which are important to see the approach I took in the amendments. The original proposal exempted B1, but that doesn't work because B1, except for light trespass on residential, I certainly kept that part. That's the key part to the whole ordinance. But you couldn't exempt B1 because if you did, then you'd be exempting all the commercial lighting from the other regulations that I put forward, which includes downward aiming and shielding. In other words, you could have a floodlight in B1 if you exempted people. So we got rid of that problem. There were also the sprinkling of exemptions throughout the original proposal that we put together in one section in the proposed ordinance. I'm going to walk through the proposed ordinance because it is nuanced, and we need to make sure that it captures what you want. But to finish up my general points, it was also very challenging because for several other reasons. One is there were a multitude of life regulation ordinances that I looked at, and therefore there were a multitude of approaches. One of the approaches that kept showing up were recommended light levels in common areas like entranceways, landscaping, living rooms, parking lots. And those guidelines were set forth in foot candles. And while you can convert foot candles to lux, and then you can go to the package light bulb and find the lux rating on that package, is a very difficult mathematical formula in terms of trying to work with those concepts. The original draft that I produced actually had a provision about recommended light levels, but considering the impact on John and trying to work with those things, I deleted that and took a more central approach, which I think does match your all's policy. The other thing that the original draft that I produced had in it, and again took it out because I think it was unwieldy, difficult to draft, and would create a lot of busy work for inspections, was an administrative waiver. If somebody could come in and demonstrate a significant hardship for not being able to comply with these new regs within the provided 2-year deadline, they could perhaps be granted an administrative waiver with all sorts of conditions and time limitations. But the deeper I got into that, the more unwieldy that became. So I took that out. And there is no relief built in for what might be a significant hardship. So keep that in mind in terms of whether you want that in or leave it out as it presently is. And that gets to my final point. Before we walk through the ordinance, what we did was provide definitions, provide exemptions, describe what is prohibited lighting, provide for prohibited lighting being a nuisance, and then you know the rest after that, enforcement of that nuisance, abatement of that nuisance. Prohibited lighting, you'll see in a second, has several components. Some of them are very specific. For example, no light of any source other than a red spectrum on the beach is procedural. But some of the other standards are more, for example, in residential districts and in parking in a commercial district, there's a height limitation on the poles from which the luminaires or the lighting installation can be mounted. I don't have enough of a feeling for that, so when we get into those, look at those height limitations and see if they work. There may be some other examples where you might have a better understanding of the standards than I do, but I think I've captured everything pretty well. The concept being regulating light trespass at the property line of any property that abuts a residentially zoned lot. So with those things in mind, let's walk through the changes.
If I may, before you jump into it, since we received our agenda packages, I have pored through this and gone through it over and over and compared it with the original intent, and I have to say it's an excellent job. It really captures what the original intent was. You got a lot of the things in there that we talked about and added to it, so I could tell how much work you did, and thank you.
That's the nicest thing I've heard all week. Thank you.
I could tell how much work went into that.
A lot of work went into it. But you know, it's interesting, it wouldn't have gotten there without the original proposal so long. And poor Beth, I was an hour away from the agenda packet deadline when I ran into problems with the provision that was originally in there about recommended light levels for common areas. And I said, I backed up. went back to your proposal about light trespass at the property line and swallowed hard, took a leap of faith, deleted it, and ran with that. And on rereading it in its final form, I think it does work. That's the hallmark, and we wouldn't have gotten there without you, so thank you. But if you turn to page 3 of this Word doc showing the changes in red, I'm pretty comfortable with the finding and the purpose. Down below where we get into B definitions, I'm comfortable with all those. I want you to pay attention to the fact that even though there's some redundancy later on in the ordinance, I think the redundancy is important because we're going to require, if the CDC recommends this approach, that new development after the effective date of this ordinance will have to submit a light plan to be approved by the building inspector with respect to exterior lighting. And so in the definition for exterior lighting, I tried to cover all the things that would need to be addressed for new development in a lighting plan. And so exterior lighting is defined as lighting equipment within the property line outside the building envelope, whether attached to poles, which is one of the specific standards, building structures, which is one of the general standards, the earth, which is covered, and any other location, which includes vegetation, facade lighting, canopy lighting, security lighting, landscaping, and flagpole lighting. And we have, in some cases, definitions for those inclusions. We have, in other cases, standards for those inclusions. And that's where some of the redundancy comes in. But I thought it's not a lot of redundancy, and I thought it was important to make sure none of those things slip through the cracks when new development is before John with the lighting plan. The definitions continue on page 4. At the bottom of 4 start the exemptions. And some of these are nuanced, so let's make sure we all agree on these. Number 1, C1, lighting within public ways for the principal purpose of illuminating public ways. You know, the right-of-way has two elements, the improved portion, which is paved, and the unimproved portion, which is adjacent to the improved portion. Of course, that's where your utilities are in the right-of-way, and that's where your light poles are. So it seems to me that one would cover light poles. That may not be the right idea. When you're going down the road and your roadway is lit up, I think those are light poles.
Your street lamps.
Street lamps, that's what I'm trying to say, street lamps. I think number 1 includes street lamps based on that, how it's worded. Lighting for public parks, that's covers KB's, Curie Beach's properties. Lighting for signs, barely regulated under section 15, but regulated enough that we can exempt it from these provisions, which makes these provisions to address and apply. Lighting for town approved theatrical or television productions. I don't really know how the town's policy or provisions for approving television or theatrical productions, so that's why the language of town approved is in there. Presumably that lighting element of any such productions is addressed at the time of any of the approval, if any, of those productions. Lighting for work areas, construction lights, the construction sites, underwater lighting, seasonal lighting, which, let's go back to the definitions for a minute. Seasonal lighting is defined as seasonal and or holiday themed lighting in cumulative use for not longer than a 6-week period in any calendar year. I think that captures what you need to capture, and you may feel differently. Number 8, lighting use in emergency situations or conditions. Number 9, lighting required under any other legal source. Number 10, lighting required by the town for public health, safety, and welfare. I'm thinking of emergency situations again, Curie Beach Pier. I thought that covered most of the exemptions. I couldn't think of anything else. Let me know if you do. We're going to get into prohibited lighting. Is there any comments or questions at this point?
That's good.
And now, this is another one of the nuanced areas. Remember, if the lighting is prohibited, it's a nuisance. Therefore, you can enforce it. So what is prohibited lighting? Number one is really the catch-all. Any lighting that does not comply with the general and special standards that follow. And we'll go through those in detail in a minute. But if you have, for example, one of the general standards is 0.5 foot candles at the property line of an adjoining residentially zoned lot. If it's greater than 0.5 foot candles, and by the way, light meters based on a button that you push measure both candela and lux. So you can measure, you can stand on that property line easily and determine what the foot candle value is by pointing it at the light. But if it's greater than 0.5, then it's prohibited lighting. If it's, and you'll see some other examples under the standards. If it doesn't comply with the standards, it's prohibited. Number two, uplighting, except as otherwise provided for in this section, or this section being all of the red that you have in front of you, uplighting, which you'll see will be permitted on flagpoles and facade lighting within certain, in conjunction with certain standards. Searchlights, beacons, laser sources, number five, light switch, blink, flash, move, etc. Number six are the turtles, illuminating by any light source, not just artificial, any portion of the beach, yada, 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 except by such frequencies of red light as to not disturb nesting or hatchling sea turtles. I thought the original proposal was too detailed and too scientific. Actually, I got this wording from Baldhead Island's a light ordinance, which is one page long, but doesn't cover a lot of things we cover, but it did have that provision about turtles, and Baldhead Island did on sea turtles. Number seven is a very important one as well, because what these regulations try to do is they try to minimize glare by location and directional aiming and materials that the lights are mounted on, the poles, for example. But the bottom line is, everything in this regulation envisions a shielded luminaire, a shielded lighting insulation, shielded so that the light is directed downwards or upwards, but not outwards. So any lamp or bulb not within a lighting installation that is visible from the property boundary line on which it is located. Another way of reading seven is any unshielded light source, and that gets right to the heart of light trespass. Eight, lighting inside of an awning when the awning material is translucent. Now we get to the general standards. Lighting, again, there were several approaches that I could take on this. The original proposal had, for example, in entryways, illumination levels not greater than 5 foot candles. But I'm smart, but I could never figure out how far away you had to be to measure that light level. And then when I actually played around with taking the not easy mathematical formula of converting candela to lux and converting lux to watts. And then I ran down and pulled up my light bulb packages and looked at the lumen ratings, and I thought, what the hell is going on? I just couldn't figure it out. So I trashed those provisions and went back to Mr. Garceau's provision, which I saw in a model ordinance at 0.3 foot candles. Another point, I never have measured light. So I cannot visualize what 0.5 foot candle illuminations look like. But the fact that I found a 0.3, and the fact that Mr. Garceau found probably more than one reference to 0.5 at the property line, I'm comfortable recommending 0.5 for those reasons. I can't describe what the level of that value, level of illumination of what that value is, but it's something that people who do know have relied on in drafting regulations of a similar type.
0.5 foot candles of the property line was in numerous examples as I was doing my research.
And again, that would be an easy thing to measure. You stand at the property line, turn around, point your light meter back at the source, hit the button, see what the foot candle range is. Again, even though we're allowing 2 years to come into compliance, we don't want 2 years to protect my trespass that ends up being a nuisance. I recall the lady that was in here a couple of months ago who described a very vivid problem. We don't want that problem to persist for 2 years. So you'll see in a little bit that I've tried to strike a balance between having 2 years to come into compliance, but if it ends up being found a public nuisance, that it can be enforced nonetheless. Let me just say, while we're on that topic, that enforcement, like graffiti, is based on a complaint. John's not going to run around looking for instances of people that are not in compliance during this two-year period. But if somebody brings a complaint and the ordinance requires building inspections to investigate that complaint, then I think we can capture some public nuisances if they ever come to our attention, despite the two-year period. Let me say something else as well. These are not zoning amendments, so there's no such thing as grandfathering. That's only applicable to zoning. This is not a zoning matter. General standards, pole mounted luminaires. Pole mounted should not, and this is what I mentioned earlier, not taller than 15 feet in residential zone lots, or when placed within 50 feet of a residential zone lot. In all other zoning districts, luminaires on poles should not be taller than 50 feet. You'll see.
Do we have anything in Curie Beach that's 50 feet tall on a pole?
Yeah.
I was wondering if that shouldn't be reduced. Well,
the cell tower.
Oh, the tower, okay.
Does the cell tower need to be an exception? Well, because it's got a light.
The cell tower, isn't that property owned by the town?
Yes.
Yeah.
So let's go. What did you say?
The property is owned by the town and the cell tower.
It's leased. So let's go back to the exemption provision, see if we need to add an exemption. Let me say one thing that I'll forget is that there's a very tiny, you miss it unless you know it's 802.04. You don't need to find it on there. I'm just telling you, when you do your ordinances, make sure you catch that tiny little thing on 802.04. You see it right there on the bottom? We're going from 0.020 to 0.030. Let's look at the exemptions again for a second, if I can find them quickly.
Page five.
The only light on that is an aircraft blinking light, right?
Which would be a required federal.
They're on the water towers also. They're both 50.
Yeah, the exemptions cover that.
Can I go back to general standards number one? I had two questions there. One is, you talk about an abutting residential zoned lot. From my experience, is you got two other situations, not necessarily abutting. One is across the street. So if you have a searchlight on one property and it shines across the street, it's not technically abutting, but it still could be a problem. So
what's your second example?
The second example is across a retention pond. So like in my case, where there's some security lights across a retention pond, they shine directly into my property. I'm not sure how you would define it as a retention pond.
That's fine by the state. They're permanent, so it's a body.
What are all the waters except for the ocean in this town stormwater related?
Yes.
I believe so, yes.
It's five of them, right?
Yes.
And could I call those things? Could I call those Could I generally refer to all those bodies of water in the town that live in the ocean as stormwater retention ponds?
Yes. Yes.
When you go into zoning, there's always a definition for a body, which includes diagonal and across the street properties. Why don't I add a definition for a budding that provides that and also includes in there stormwater retention ponds?
Okay, that's fine, because I think those are... The other issue I had, too, is that we talked about is that a lot of people do have security lights. And the security lights can be quite bright, obviously, when they come on. And so we had talked originally about a situation where people could have a security light that might exceed the lumens or foot candles, 0.5 foot candles, but if they have a timer where it shuts off in 5 minutes or something like that, that would be okay. And again, right now, this says that no, you can't have it, period. I'm not sure how people feel about having...
Let me answer that question.
Sure.
Maybe I'm ignorant about security lights, but it seems to me the bottom line is a light is either compliant or it's not. Maybe there's something about security lights when you come on. Maybe they're bright and they come down later. I don't know that.
No, they just come on all night. Some people will leave those lights on. Or
to me, that's a non-compliant light. Why can't you have a security light that doesn't emit more than 25 across the property line?
You could have your house lit up like the runway as long as it doesn't cross the property line.
Right, okay. All right.
You have shielded...
Because I think that's where there's going to be a lot of issues in terms of non-compliance. I think, including my house, probably my front lights are motion sort of thing, and they come on, and they are pretty bright. I'm sure that my neighbors technically, but they do shut off after 5 minutes.
Here's how this ordinance works: you either get a lower light bulb, or you shield and aim that light so it doesn't go across out horizontally to the property line.
Okay, so I just want to make sure that. My general feeling is to allow kind of a 5 minute timer, but I don't know how the rest of the commission feels about that. If you feel that.
I don't have a problem with that.
With what?
Normally they come on, well, at least in our neighborhood, normally come on at dark. They come on for 5 minutes and they go off. And once again, if this is nuisance driven, if it's not a nuisance to the person across the street, then it won't.
There was something to that effect in the original draft, and it was very, very difficult, and I read numerous interpretations of it as I was doing the research on it. But there were time limits in there, but then there were also things about not having nuisance trips by animals or moths or whatever else. And
you don't have animals, that's where a lot of them are from.
What is,
but they happen at 2 o'clock in the morning.
But what if it's shining right into your bedroom window across the next door? It is a nuisance. And so if that light's going on every 30 minutes and all through the night, then it's a problem.
Nuisance versus safety. Well, I don't know what you do there.
Well, it doesn't have to interfere with safety as long as it's, you're lighting up your property. You're just keeping it from crossing it the light line.
So what I'm hearing is that people are comfortable with this, and then simply that, well, you better shield your security light rather than worry about shutoffs and timers and all that sort of
thing. Why don't we just hold on to that thought and go through the rest of the standards and convince there we can do this. Building mounted luminaires. Building mounted, well, first of all, before we leave two, are we comfortable with 15 in residential and 50 in otherwise?
I didn't know that we needed to be as high as 50 in the other areas. I'm comfortable.
What's the building height?
35.
You in commercial areas, do you want something larger than the building height?
John, do we have any?
That's what I asked. I don't think there are any poles.
Yeah, can a flagpole go higher than 35? Is that allowed?
Well, we got a specific standard.
You're right. Okay, you're right. Right. No.
Do we have any lights that are taller than our 35-foot building height currently?
Wrapped into this is compliance.
I can't think of any.
You don't want to, if you do have something that, if you bring it less than 50 and you've got somebody that's 50, they're looking at the expense of putting in a new light bulb. So enforced compliance enters into how tall you want those things to be. But I'm not familiar enough with.
Well, let's kind of hold off on that because let's see what we decide to do if we're going to.
Building mounted is the same idea, not attached to a sloped roof and not taller than 30 feet or the height of the principal building, whichever is less. Material for light poles tells you, I can't pronounce that first word, anodized. I got it right. Painted or otherwise coated to minimize glare. No overhead electrical lines for lighting installations. Number six is the other very important one. Types of lights. Full cutoffs used in parking lots, except as otherwise provided in this section. All other pole or building mounted luminaires. And I think that covers most exterior lighting. Shall be directed downward if the light source shielded so that it is not visible from adjacent property.
I think we're going to get in trouble using shielded is directed for a type of product we're going to use because LED technology uses reflective lights more so than shielded.
I would be very reluctant to get away from shielding in these provisions because I think.
Well, I mean, reflective lighting does the same thing as shielded. It's just a different technology.
Then I don't think you'll have a complaint, so I don't know that that would come up as an issue.
Well, as long as it's not a complaint, but if you're directing somebody to use a shielded light instead of reflective technology, that the LED advancements happen pretty quick. So some of the shielding, simply because of the types of materials, the amount of material you use, becoming more compact. Reflective technology allows them to do the same amount of light. It's like putting a mirror behind your light. They're using, you know, less power, putting more light out, but they're not using the shield, and it can direct and aim the light without shield.
How would you like add a word or two in that? And would you say something like them directed downward and the light shielded and or reflected so it is not visible? I mean, without trying to make it too complicated, just simply.
I don't think we, you know, what I was trying to say is let's not paint ourselves into a corner, you know, on technology.
How about this? Except as otherwise provided in this section, all other, and you know, what I want to do is put exterior instead of pole or building mounted, but let's plug that in just for a second, but to get to somebody's point. All other exterior luminaries shall be directed downward and the light source shielded or reflected. Does that work?
Yes, I think that's adequate.
Can I jump in real quick? I mean, because I think this is going to take a long time to go through, and I do know we have somebody online for the pool. Are those residents still online? Okay. I wonder if we could do kind of give them a break and do a time certain that we will get to their particular topic or.
I don't have a problem if you want to listen to them now and come back.
Okay. I mean, is that okay with the commission? Okay. Yeah. Let's go ahead and do that. Because I can see this going for, you know, a long time chatting about the lights. So, all right. So anyway, we're going to. I don't think we need a motion for this. We can simply just go to this item. This is the item that we added to the agenda regarding the pool. And probably the starting point for this is to have John. John, can you kind of just do a quick introduction on this before we hear from the residents? Yes. Yeah.
This was brought up. My code enforcement officer noticed a pool placed across town right away and within the front setback of the property. Pretty much the same day, I noticed one in the backyard of a house in a totally separate area of town that had also built a wooden deck and platform to get up to their pool area. The code enforcement officer asked me about enforcement. We looked at the code. The code doesn't address things of these natures. We met with one of the property owners in particular, encouraged them to contact P&Z to see if maybe you guys would be willing to discuss it, potentially make some changes. and that we would hold off on enforcement until you guys talk about it. So that's pretty much where it's at right now.
Okay, and that's the one that's been presented to us right here with the pictures?
I don't know what you have in front of you.
Okay.
I got a question for John. I know the code regulates encroachments into setbacks, but I don't know, and I'm curious if you do. Is there any provision in the code that deals directly with encroachments into right-of-ways?
There should be nothing located in the right-of-way.
Somewhere that we could amend it if we need to.
I would highly discourage that type of action.
Okay. So anyway, what we have here, it looks like we've been given a couple pictures of a temporary pool. It looks like about 4 foot high, maybe 10 foot in diameter. And we do have the residents on the line, so probably it would be good to hear from the residents in terms of what we're talking about here and what you are proposing, and maybe a little bit of the history, because I do recognize in the email that you sent me that this, you've been doing this now for several years, and this is the first year that you've had a code enforcement issue related to this. But I'll go ahead and turn it over to the residents that are online right now.
Hello, can you hear
us? Yes.
Yeah, basically, like you said, we've had it about 7 years every summer when we come down. And this is the first year that we've heard anything about it. So we're trying to find out if there's any way we can get it by. It happened up temporarily through the summer months. And what we have to do to make that work or not.
I am actually a school teacher, and so when we come down to spend our summer here, we don't get down here until the middle of June, and then we leave at the end of July, at the very beginning of August. So it would be one of those deals where we usually only have it up for about a month and a half, and then we take it down. So it's not anything where we have any kind of permanent structure built around it, like you mentioned before with your other pool. That you talked about, it's just basically for our boys and our nephews that come down so that the kids can enjoy it and play in the pool.
Again, I've got one question. Looking at the picture, is there any way that you can have this structure without infringing on the right-of-way or the setback? Okay, it looks like there's
space
that you can move it where this wouldn't even be an issue. And again, correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I think if you look at the other picture that we got from Bethany with the setback and where the actual right of way is, I don't think there's any room there because I heard you mention that you thought it might be around 10 foot wide, but it's actually 18 foot wide.
John, so if we backed it up, we would have to back it up all the way to our garage, and then we wouldn't be allowed to use the garage, and so we wouldn't be able to get in and out of the garage.
Yeah, I think we would still be a few feet over the setback there.
John, you
and
can hear
me. I'm sorry.
No, we had our building inspector with his hand raised, so I'm a school teacher too, so when I see that, I have to go to the hand raise.
Completely understand.
I was just going to mention on my code enforcement officer, when Beth made contact with them, they said that they've been doing it for 3 years, which is around the timeline that I remember. It's been popping up also. This is the first year I've actually noticed it all the way on town property, though. While that's one of my major concerns as far as safety and liability on the town for allowing a pool to be on the town property, there is also our ordinances in regards to setbacks, and particularly the 20-foot setback for the front yards there for parking. That's not for swimming pools.
So there's really two issues. There's the town property, which is the right-of-way, and then there's the setback issue here. Okay. How far does the town property, the right-of-way, go? I mean, you have 20-foot setback, but what's the town property?
It's 50-foot right-of-way, so it's usually around 10 to 12 feet off the edge of the road where private property starts.
Okay. So I guess
and
they...
What
go
he
ahead.
Said, Addressing what he said, what we have done in the past, we've had a pool for about 7 or 8 years, and what we've done as the kids have gotten older is that we've grown, the pool has grown and gotten bigger. We have this pool for about 3 years, and so what we've done is we've had this pool for 3 years, and so that's maybe why he's saying three. So when I mentioned to her and talked with her over message when I left her with mail, that's what I said.
Okay, so you know what, this discussion we're having is not specifically related to your pool. What we're talking about now is a general discussion about temporary structures in setbacks and right-of-ways. And so I'm going to open it up to the commission members here to, I think we've heard everything, so you know, see if the commission members have any comments on this or questions.
We just went through a setback issue with the council, what, 2 months ago, where we enforced and had people take things off the setback due to the parking. Am I right, John? So this is definitely more on that, where it's, like I said, it's...
If I may, I think it's really important to explain to the residents on the phone what your role is here and what they're asking about. You're not an enforcement body, you're a policy body. And so they're not asking for permission to you guys to allow this on the right of way. They're asking if there's any way that this ordinance can change to allow this type of thing. So I just want to make sure the residents are clear on that. I know you guys are, I just want to make sure they were.
Yeah, I think I made that clear in the email that I sent them, that you know we're the planning commission, so we make recommendations to the town council about ordinances, and it's the ordinance then that once it's in place then is enforced by the building inspector. So you know we can't say yes you can do it. All we can do is discuss the issue about temporary structures within the right-of-way and setback, make a proposal to the town council, they can either approve it or not approve it, and then that then becomes the law, so to speak, and enforceable within the town of Cary Beach. So that's really the only mechanism right now, because as of right now, you are in violation of the code. So that's obviously why you received that particular letter. So with that kind of a so that explanation, let's see if there's any commission members that have any additional questions. I know you had a question.
No, I was just saying.
If there's another homeowner on the line too, so I was waiting to talk. Just want to make sure you know I was here. A different homeowner.
Do you want to go ahead and talk? Chairman, you want to let this...
Yeah, sure.
I can be patient.
Yeah. You know, certainly, if anybody wants to contribute to the discussion, that's fine. So if there's another homeowner who wants to contribute to this, just hit *6 and identify yourself.
Hi, this is Michael. I'm a second homeowner with a very similar issue. I don't have... we are only in the setback. We're not in any of the town property. But we have a pool that we put up and take down every year as well. We actually live here in Cary Beach and have for about 5 or 6 years. And we've been putting pools up and down every year and thought because it was a temporary structure and our ability to take it up and down, much like a trampoline or a swing set, a lot of our friends and neighbors have, that it was okay until we got here.
That actually raises a very interesting issue. I'm going to go ahead and ask John again. My neighbors have, in fact, several of the neighbors have trampolines, you know, which have metal structures and nets around them and everything like that. That certainly would be within the setback.
I think you got to look at what the definition of setbacks are and what the reasons for those restrictions are. Can two firemen pick up a trampoline and move it out of the way to... underwater hose at a burning building? I think the answer to that is a round yes. Can we pick up a 10,000 gallon swimming pool and evacuate that quickly? I guess we could throw an axe on it and bust it real quick and blow all the water out, but honestly, I believe that if it's something that can be moved very quickly, it would fall within, you know, an allowable use in that setback.
Okay. I don't mean to kind of probe this, but the argument that you just said for the setback in the front is parking. Okay, now you're making a safety argument. So if you have a pool within the setback in the front that is not on the side or blocking any sort of thing, how would that affect the safety and the ability of the fire department to get there?
Well, for one, it's on town right of way, so.
Well, that's a different issue. Let's assume that
That's still a safety issue, and yes, primarily because swimming pools should be made safe for children, and there are a book of regulations on swimming pool safety, and the fact that we've allowed one on our town right of way kind of puts the town in a liability there.
Are there not issues with a swimming pool that requires a fence around it as well for?
As long as the lip of that pool is higher than 48 inches and the stairs are removed every time it's not in use, it technically falls into safety guidelines and it's okay. Back to your question, Mr. Chairman, about the safety requirement for the firemen and things of that nature. I guess you're pretty accurate there. You know, it could be a car. So.
Okay.
I have concerns with town liability. I have concerns with access for emergency services and other things. The reason that the right-of-ways are what they are, and with the fact that we just recently went through this exercise and have been asking people to remove other property and clean things up, I'm having a very difficult time considering this as an exception, just from my input.
Bill, do you have anything?
I agree with David.
Tony?
Well, I think...
Let's let our commission talk, and then we'll have the resident talk here.
I think that, just from the safety perspective, the town's liability, just having a pool exposed in front of the house in the setbacks and in the town right-of-way opens up a lot of opportunity for risk, not only for the homeowner, but for the town. And it just oozes a lot of potential liability for a lot of different people. Swimming pools are fun, but they also, that's why there's so many building codes around swimming pools to protect people, children, such as the electrical safety, the fencing, having certain types of gates where kids can't just walk in. So I'm struggling to even entertain anything with this right now.
Okay. Yes, and there somebody was going to make a comment, I believe. One of the residents, I cut him off.
Yeah, I think the change to ordinance would be related to movable items. It has maybe some restrictions on the amount of time it takes to remove something. If for one thing, it should be for all things. And I thought it'd be like swing sets and other items that seem to be overlooked. I don't see this, how do we define the ordinance so that it's safe and fair offer removable things that we have in our backyard. And again, mine is only in the setback, not in the property line. So in a fully fenced-in area, and a little bit different than the other, but removable temporary items, I think. There has to be some type of exception for movable temporary items like a tambourine, a tambourine, not just interested in. And although you may have talked about this before, we live in a little bit of a different time now where these things are super important specifically for my family, to have the pool in the backyard as we're really quarantining with, due to high risk autoimmune disease people in my family that live in the house. So, the pool is even more important than it's ever been because we're trying to stay away from all the vacationers and the people coming to the beach and trying to use this to facilitate our own fun and safe environment. So, maybe you've looked at this before, but things have changed quite a bit. Maybe you could loosen or review one more time in the current environment.
Okay. My feeling, I've always been a big fan that if you have an ordinance, you need to enforce it. And what I've heard in this discussion is that we're not really enforcing it if it's a trampoline that can be moved, if it's a swing set that can be moved and so forth, but we are, and probably a small pool that, you know, you could dump out a little kiddie pool or something like that, but we are enforcing it for something this large. And I understand the logic of that. What I would like to ask either John or the attorney is that in our ordinance now, is there something that distinguishes between things that can be moved and not moved, I guess?
No, and so I agree with Mr. Grillo, and I appreciate the residents speaking up to you guys because it would be helpful to have some more clarity. More clarity for us to in our enforcement practices.
I believe the ordinance reads that there shouldn't be any obstructions in the right of way, which is very clear.
Right. I agree with that. But is a trampoline an obstruction?
Or a swing set or a kiddie pool?
It could be.
That's.
Well, it gets down to man portable and whether it's permanently attached to the ground.
Well, no, I absolutely agree, and that's what I think this discussion is involved with, is that do we need a better definition?
Because I think John's right. I mean, something that, in case of an emergency, that needs to be moved quickly, that's not permanently attached to ground, like a trampoline or even some swing sets, they can be moved pretty quickly. But like I said, even a small swimming pool, like a lot of, you talk about a small swimming pool, if it's got several gallons of water, that still takes time where either just run over it, but then you have other issues with that. So if we need to define better what is man portable and attached, I don't mind doing that.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's what's going to come out of this discussion, is that this has raised an issue that perhaps we need to address in terms of temporary structures and how that can be defined, that would be allowed in a setback, again, like swing sets and trampolines and, but we need to be careful that, as to how we define that in this particular case.
But that doesn't solve John's problem right now.
No. John really doesn't have a problem right now because he's enforcing the existing ordinance from the way I read it.
Yeah.
So we're trying to decide if we need to make a recommendation.
But he also said that he was holding off enforcement based on our input.
Well, I don't think there's really a choice at this point. The code is what the code is, and the enforcement needs to apply. And if we do need to make change for future times, then so be it. But I don't think there's really a choice right now. The code is there, and the code is enforceable.
And Mr. Eldridge?
Just a couple of comments. You got two issues, right-of-way, encroachment into the right-of-way, which it sounds like, just to be on the record, the consensus is not to allow under any circumstances. Then you have encroachments into the setbacks. And it may be, you may be right that we can tweak those provisions. I did want to point out, not that I'm recommending it or that it would change the outcome, but any property owner can apply for a text amendment. So it's not, they're not without that recourse if they want to go that route. A proposed text amendment would be reviewed by this body and then acted on by council. But I did want to point out to the property owners that they are authorized to seek a text amendment if they so desire.
I did recognize that, and kind of what we're having tonight is almost a discussion like if a text amendment would be presented.
I encourage them, Beth and I encourage them to bring this to you guys.
Yeah, right. So my feeling is that in this particular case with the existing ordinance is that it should be enforced, by the building inspector. But I would like to recommend that we put on the agenda for our next meeting continued discussion of this particular issue regarding temporary structures in both right-of-way as well as setbacks. I think there's a general agreement that we wouldn't allow it within a right-of-way.
But didn't we kind of address this once when we had the side problem with the shower and the area around it?
We did. If I remember right, there was a shower in the setback, and they argued that it wasn't bolted down or something like that.
Right, it was portable. They could
lift it. Yeah, you're right. And I forget exactly what we Well, we dealt with.
There's a difference between right of way and setback here. Right of way is going to be an issue, right. Period.
The encroachments into the setback come up periodically. The last one we did was very recently with respect to access to disability ramps.
Right, we had disability ramps. Which, by the way, is going to public hearing, I believe, for the meeting. I forgot to mention that to the commission, but our setback recommendation regarding the handicap ramps is going to public hearing at the council meeting.
But I think your point about discussing next month how Chapter 15 regulates various encroachments, temporary or otherwise, into the setback is a worthy idea.
Okay.
But for the town right of way, that's a different conversation that I can't entertain, you know, much discussion around that. I think that's just something that for the safety of the public and the safety of the town and the risk the town would absorb.
It's my understanding that we're contemplating a discussion on encroachments and setbacks.
That's correct. Yeah, I think there's general consensus on the commission from the right-of-way perspective that none of us would recommend anything in the right-of-way. So anyway, again, just to kind of summarize what the options are, I think what you're hearing from the commission is that we currently have an ordinance. The building inspector is planning on enforcing that particular ordinance. You have the right to bring a specific text amendment, which is to recommend a change to the ordinance that would allow something like this, and that would be a formal process that you do have the right to bring before the Planning and Zoning Commission. We would then discuss it, but I think, you know, that's why I wanted to get this discussion, because this is almost like doing that without formally doing a text amendment proposal here. But you heard that you did raise an important issue about what we would allow within a setback. I think you also heard from the commission, I think probably the commission would probably reflect the opinion of the town council too, about things in the right-of-way. But we do need to fine-tune our setback discussion as to what would be allowed, what would be temporary, what would be movable, and all these sort of things. And that we're going to have on our next agenda in August. Unfortunately, given the time it takes to get this process going, we, you know, even if we were to recommend a change and it would be passed by the town council, it would probably be several months out, well after the summer by the time that's done. So I think that, and again, I hate to, you know, sound like the enforcement officer here, but I think the enforcement officer is within his rights and probably has the support of the commission and I'm guessing the town council in terms of enforcing the existing ordinance. Does anybody else on the commission or anybody want to say, we do have a member of the town council here. He's been nodding at various times and shaking his head. Is it appropriate for the town council member to say anything at this particular point?
I agree with y'all. The setbacks may be more lenient, but the right of way really not good for discussion.
Okay. All right.
Chairman, I'll produce a very brief memo for the next meeting discussing how Chapter 15 regulates structures, temporary or otherwise, within the setback.
Okay. John, you know, based upon what you just heard there, can you communicate to the residents what you plan on doing right now at this point, or is that appropriate? Okay, because I know you told them that would have be held off until our meeting. So, you know, we now have discussed this.
I haven't seen the letter that got sent, so I can't really answer that question right now. Probably what I'll be doing is directing her to continue the enforcement process with the start date of tomorrow, since I told them we'd hold off until you guys discussed it. I'll have to review the letter, but most likely that will be the process.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. And again,
can I ask the commission one more thing before we break?
Yes, yeah, sure.
Would it be possible if we put in the text amendment, then we go put in the text amendment, can we ask the commission to hold off as we put in the text amendment, at least just for the setback, the one with the setback?
I didn't quite get everything that you said, but if you do want to submit a text amendment, what that would be is that it'd actually be a proposal specifically to reword the existing ordinance that would allow what you're talking about here.
Mr. Chairman, he's asking for enforcement to be abated until...
Oh, I see. I'm sorry.
The text amendment.
Okay, so, John, it's your call.
Submit the text amendment.
If I understood you correctly, you wanted to know if you brought forward an official text amendment request, would we stay in enforcement? Okay. I'll have to confirm with our attorney and I can get back with you as soon as I hear something.
Okay, so, you know, just to clarify that for the record again, is that there was a request for abatement of enforcement if you do bring a formal text amendment to our next meeting, and that the building inspector said he would consult with the attorney and then communicate with the residents regarding that.
As a comment on that, even with a text amendment, that does not address the right-of-way issue, which nobody's going to support. So it would have to be moved into the setback in any case.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. I'm not sure if the residents heard that, but the general feeling is that nobody would support a structure within the town right-of-way, that we're really talking about a text amendment that would be in reference to the setback and not the right-of-way. Is that fine?
Yes, we understood that.
Okay. Again, thank you very much for coming and presenting. And you know, like I said, I did want to make sure that we did discuss this, and I do appreciate the building inspector pushing this forward to the planning and zoning so we could have a good discussion. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, back to agenda item 5.2.
We left off of page 6. We were talking about the general standards, and we were focused on paragraph 6. I've done some additional changes since we last spoke, so let me read to you the way I've currently got it drafted. My new drafting. Number 6, full cutoff luminaries shall be used in parking lots, except as otherwise provided in this section. And here are the changes. All other exterior lighting that opens it up more than currently. Comma, including pole or building-mounted luminaires, comma, shall be directed downward and the light source shielded or reflected so that, and I've completely changed the last part, so that the light does not exceed 25 foot candles at the property line of an abutting residentially zoned lot. I don't know that we could, the original wording for the very last part of the last sentence was not visible from an adjacent property. You may have a completely compliant light, but you could still see that luminaire. So why don't we just make that regulation tied back up to the light trespass standard set forth in paragraph 1 above. That's my suggestion there.
I agree with that update, and then it also ties it back to the point 5 at the property line, so it ties it back to the same expectation.
Number 7 is the new development lighting standard. No new development, as that term is defined in KBC 1502.010. That's one of the definitions we did a few months ago. Within the town, and here's some of that redundancy I mentioned, that involves exterior lighting, including without limitation, facade, canopy, landscaping, or flagpole lighting, shall be undertaken without the written approval by the building inspector of the lighting plan, which is a defined term, showing conformity with the requirements of this section. I've not conferred with John, so there's two questions here. Is commission comfortable with that, and is John comfortable with that?
I'm fine with that.
I'm comfortable with it. We asked for a lighting plan with the...
And this is only for a development, not for individual structures being built, because we have a definition, as you said, of development. So this is not an individual structure lighting plan.
No, it could be. Let me read you.
I think it's
for the individual structure.
You have a lighting plan for a resident.
Development is defined as any of the following: construction, erection, alteration, enlargement, renovation, substantial repair, movement to another site, or demolition of any structure, the excavation, grading, filling, clearing, or alteration of land, the subdivision of land, or the initiation of a substantial change in the use of land. I think if you're going to have new development, even if that includes landscaping lighting only for a residential structure, you would want to see that it complies with these standards.
I agree.
So, okay, so just so everybody understands, so what we're doing is we're going to have a lighting plan for anybody who wants to put new landscaping in, build a new house, renovate an older house. What we're now going to ask is to have a lighting plan submitted to John for approval.
You could, one of the things I wrestled with was limiting that obligation to development that required a permit, because we've got that defined as well. But if you limit it to development that requires a permit, in my opinion, you're still leaving out a lot of things that don't require a permit that could result in prohibited lighting. So that's why I went with the broader definition of development per se that was not limited to permit approval.
Why, just correct me, if we're so concerned about specifying what would not be prohibited, and it would be complaint driven. So that's what we're writing. Then why don't we just allow people to put whatever lights they in as long as they satisfy the requirements rather than requiring a full lighting plan?
That's one approach. I don't have a dog in this fight. And this is what I've presented. You all can choose what policy works. But John, did you have anything?
I think it'd be easier to do this up front versus enforce it afterwards and then have headaches and arguments.
Well, first of all, I'm not a lighting expert. I get my electrician buddy to put my lights up for me. I don't know anything about lights. I just want to hit the button. I want them to turn on. So as far as looking at development lighting, I don't like that at all. That's a whole other step of the process. I agree with the chairman that, you know, I can make this ordinance a part of the application process and make sure they have that or treat it like everything else. It's the builder's responsibility to know the ordinances the community that he's doing this building in. And once again, as the chairman pointed out, this will be a complaint-driven ordinance. There's no ifs, ands, and buts about that.
I'm going to support what John's saying. I think just for him having to enforce this prior to is going to be a challenging task for him. I think that the builders that are building should understand what the requirements are, and they're going to have to abide by those requirements instead of John trying to do it. I think the enforcement is a whole different piece from complaints, but I think up front is we have this requirement, this is what you have to do, and that's what we should focus on.
So then are we dropping 0.7 entirely?
You have residents that go out and put, decorative lighting in there in front yards and all that. I think they ask them to come and put a plan and get approved. If they put it up wrong and it shines into somebody's light, we've got the nuisance. We'll take care of that.
John trying to try to figure out if this plan will work, he doesn't know. Until he turns it off.
And Dave, I agree. It would be nice to do it up front. But I think in this instance, it's just there's too much variety of that.
I think the bad sources.
Having heard your discussion, I'm leaning to agree with you.
I don't have a problem with that. If it's complaint-based investigation reveals that it violates any of the general standards, that's what we're talking about.
And I'm sure for any permitted sort of thing, John will let them know that we have a lighting ordinance now, then they have to abide by that lighting ordinance.
I don't think we need to burden his office with upfront approval, so I don't have.
Okay, so it sounds to me that we would go ahead and drop number 7.
Now, subsection F gets into specific applications. Flagpoles, fully shielded or reflected, would that be correct, Tony? Fully shielded or reflected upward?
Yes, I mean, we got to have it where it's, this follows the technology.
Yeah, I know, I'm just asking if the text, if inserting or reflected upward covers your point.
I think that would be accurate.
Building facade lighting, number 2, you look at the subsection, shall only accentuate an architectural or aesthetic element. The light shall be directed, I guess we could say, or reflected onto the building's facade, not spill over beyond the plane of the building. Turning the page on the top part, and shall not exceed 4,000 mean lumens. That's a rating that you'll see on the light bulb package per feature. Be aimed or reflected directly upward. I guess we, Tony, what should I do there? Should I take out fully shielded if we're aiming and reflecting up?
Yeah, I don't think I would use that. I think we're covering it with
reflected fully upward or downward.
Yeah,
I think aimed upward or downward covers it.
And mounted flush to the wall. Canopy lighting, full cutoff luminary shall be used mounted beneath the canopy and pointed downward so the light is confined to the ground surface beneath the canopy. Sides and top of the canopy not illuminated unless it's signage, then go to chapter 15. Lighting beyond the perimeter of the canopy shall be consistent with the lighting standards for parking areas. I think we should say consistent with the lighting standards, with the general standards that we just walked through.
Well, I agree. You've got three different standards. You know, if you have a standard for parking, it's going to be a problem.
Right. So general standards include that.
Right.
Yes, so we'll change that. Applicability, we're leaving now the standards, general and special. Non-compliance with equal prohibited lighting based on a complaint-based investigation followed by enforcement. So before we leave the standards and how not meeting those standards results in prohibited lighting, any other comments other than what we've discussed?
I just want to reiterate, I know how much work went into this from what I did before, so there's a lot of detail in here and an extra thought process, so very well done.
G, applicability, except as provided for in this section, all exterior lighting installed after the effective date of this section shall comply with the requirements set forth herein. This applicability, we're going to have to make a change here, if I remember correctly. This applicability includes, but is not limited to, new lighting equipment, light fixtures, replacement lighting, or any other lighting, whether attached to structures, poles, the earth, or any other building, or any other location. Except as otherwise provided, all exterior lighting installed shall be made to conform to these requirements within 2 years after the effective date. H, non-conforming lighting, notwithstanding the provisions, in other words, notwithstanding the two-year compliance period set forth above, non-conforming lighting shall be made to conform to the requirements of this section when, upon the effective date of this section, property owners shall make, where reasonable and feasible to do so, minor modifications and corrective measures to their lighting installations, such as, for example, re-aiming or shielding the lighting to achieve conformity with the applicable requirements set forth herein. Tony, re-aiming, I think, would cover our LED reflection issue.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that says four examples as well, right? So it's only an example of.
Correct. Number two, which is the important one, non-conforming, in other words, you got 2 years to comply, but if you can do so as a no-brainer, you need to go ahead and do that. You also need to do so if they come under two, subsection two, if a complaint-based investigation determines that the subject lighting constitutes a public nuisance, or three, there's a change in the use of the subject property. So you got 2 years to come into compliance, but you still want to be able to enforce. So the key provision here is two key provisions. If you can do it easily, if you can take certain steps to fix it, go ahead and do that. But more to the point, If we pass it on Monday and they got 2 years to fix it, if somebody calls Tuesday and says my neighbor's shining a floodlight into my bedroom, that's the complaint. If the investigation reveals that that's the same and it violates the 0.5 standard of the property line, then that's a nuisance and they have to take care of that despite the 2 years. Abatement and everything else that follows is what we did with graffiti. You get a notice, you got 15 days to fix the problem. If not, you've got a nuisance and you'll get a civil citation and all the other good things that follow thereafter. Any questions?
I think it's a great, I mean, tremendous amount of effort. My only issue is the 0.5 lumens. Again, like you, I have no idea what that means.
Does Tony have a, can you visualize that based on your experience? I mean, typical porch lighting, is that going to be 0.5 at the property line? Do you know? Because I don't.
You might get that at Newton Light, you know, to be honest with you. It's not a lot.
The reason I'm mentioning that is that, you know, the idea that we're looking at is to make our town more comfortable than the average. Okay, so, you know, I think of a big city or something like that which has a lot of lights, and you said you found a lot of 0.5 lumens. That may work in a downtown area, may work in other type of suburban areas. We're Curie Beach, and so my feeling is that we're trying to really make something that's more comfortable for our residents. Again, I have no idea of 0.5, so I'm wondering if that's that spotlight that shines into my daughter's bedroom, if that's 0.5, 0.3, it is annoying. I know it's annoying. We all went out and looked at when we had the resident come here and complain, make a complaint. Several of us went over there and drove by, and we looked at that. You know, they were upset about it. They complained. Was it 0.5? I mean, I have no idea.
We got a couple of points. What you've just described, the inability to visualize the illumination of that value, is something that I've wrestled with the whole time of drafting this thing. That's why I'm curious if anybody had any experience, and that's also why I was comforted by the fact that that standard seemed to be utilized in quite a few of the models. That 0.5 foot candles, not lumens, seem to be utilized by quite a few of the model ordinances, and I saw examples where even less was 0.3 was used. My fallback was let me make one other point. You do need an objective standard, because anything else would be subjective and subject to attack. You just can't have the code enforcement officer go out there and say, yeah, that's too much glare. It just doesn't work. It's going to be more problems than it's worth. Plus, you always need to keep in mind from here on out that any changes you make to the code, if we get challenged in court and we lose, we're paying attorney's fees. So the ball game has really changed. So you need to really make sure you're careful about doing things the right way. That's why we can't have any subjective interpretation.
Nobody's suggesting a subjective interpretation here. In fact, town council made it quite clear that they did not want a subjective one, too. So what my concern is when I hear what standards are, you know, for example, a lot of sign ordinances are 50 foot and they have billboards. Well, that doesn't mean we should use that the standard for Curie Beach. So my concern is to have the proper foot candle 0.5 appropriate to what we're trying to manage here. Whether it's 0.3, 0.2, I mean, I have no idea.
Need to understand what that measurement means. I mean, right now, sitting at this desk, it's 65.
So you got what, 65 foot candles there?
Yes.
Do you have a meter?
Yeah, you get it on your iPhone. It's
nice. Oh, cool.
But I don't think you can use it for enforcement.
I'd like to go out tonight and go check the foot candles of.
I think I'll give you guys some information. I mean, I looked a lot when I was doing my research. I must have looked at hundreds of different examples because it was really stuck in my head. How do I write this in a way that makes sense for us? And it was almost universal that 0.5 was the number given at a property line. The only variation in that is that some of them said 0.5, 2 feet above the ground. Some people said at ground level and so on.
Two quick points. Your jurisdiction, were they various sizes, small and large?
I looked at smaller towns, and I looked a lot at coastal towns, Central Florida coastal towns that didn't have kind of the Miami, Fort Lauderdale stuff. I was looking at smaller towns like Melbourne and along towards Titusville and places like that. So I was looking at all of those towns. Florida seems to be very progressive on this, and there were a lot of lighting ordinances to look at. I can't tell you what 0.5 is either, just to walk down the street and see it, but I can tell you that it was an extremely common measurement as I was doing.
I can tell you a full moon would be more than 0.5.
The full moon can get pretty bright.
The whole basic, first of all, council, you did excellent. I know a lot of work went in there, but I guess my thought was, I look at the noise ordinance, it's got 11 things in it. The town, the person can look in there and say, oh, yeah, I can ball on that. I have no idea what a person's going to do with this. I mean, that's got so much technical stuff in it. How do you even know if you can call? That's my concern. I may be the only one to think that way, but it's a great document. But for a document that's supposed to be driven nuisance, how many residents are going to understand that?
It's complaint-based.
It's complaint-based, but what if I go to the ordinance and try to figure out... It's a great technical document, but I don't know if it's...
I think we're going to get challenged on the metric we put in there. Whatever that metric is, I don't know what the right metric is. I think we're going to get a lot of challenge on it.
I mean, to me, it all builds around the 0.5 foot candles. I mean, any complaint is going to be based on, it's too bright, it's shining in my window.
All right, look. Okay.
And someone's going to go out there with a meter and they're going to measure this. And so to me, that no matter how long it is.
Let me make a suggestion. We've talked about so many tweaks to the ordinance that I would recommend not passing it on the council tonight. Let's look at it again next month. In the meantime, why don't we buy a light meter, get it shipped to us within a week or two at the most, and go out and measure some lighting levels from the property line and put candles to see what 0.5 looks like.
I think that's an excellent idea. And by the way, I'm all in favor of the ordinance. My only concern is to make sure that we have the right measure of foot candles that's appropriate for Curie Beach.
Don't forget, it's a living document. If it finds that it doesn't work, we can plug in a new value. But we can get, none of us today have an idea what that illumination of that value looks like. We get a light meter and figure it out.
How much does a light meter, of the quality that we would give the building inspector or the code enforcement officer to?
1 to 200.
So it's not.
No, it's not okay. Basic.
Another thing is, again, looking at different towns, and some of these codes are 40, 50 pages long as you go through them. So this may not seem like it, but this really is pretty concise.
But read definition B, cut off illuminance. That's a definition that somebody's going to go by. Illuminance where less than 2.5% of the lamp illumina occurred at or above a horizon plane of no more than 10% of the lamp illumina occurred above 80%.
Oh, I understand that, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. But those definitions come from the international lighting standards or whatever it is.
But you're talking about a person who said, my neighbor has, and he goes to the, and he's like,
I don't know you're going to argue definitions too much because those have to come from like the standards.
What does that mean then? It's a definition. It's a basis for the definition, the basis for the documents. And if you can't explain the definition or if the definitions are not clear, then.
No, I'm not looking at
the one. I'm sorry, I just have a little.
No, that's fine.
I'm not looking at the one.
Yeah, I think it's, I would. you know, take the advice of Mr. Eldridge and say that we think about this, that we try to get some sort of a meter to kind of go out and see what it looks like. I'm going to download this app tonight and walk around my neighborhood and actually see if that helps too. But I think there's a lot of, you know, a lot of thinking that still needs. Yeah. I mean we've got a tremendous way in terms of going from where we were talking 6 months ago to this point. So
now the thing of it is, if you, but you go out and measure with your app on your phone, do you call John right away at 10 o'clock at night?
Not tonight. I'm not going to.
Pardon?
I said not tonight. I won't.
So then he's got to come back. He's got to come back at 10 o'clock the next day or next night and replicate what you just did.
I think the chairman just wants to see for himself, but I still...
No, I'm talking about enforcement.
No, that's a good point, because, you know, all the complaints are going to occur at 11 o'clock at night. I mean, you're absolutely right.
Day one, this was a nighttime activity.
Yeah. But if I take my meter, John's not coming at 10 o'clock, so he's got to come the next night and replicate. And if for some reason the light's not on,
This is going to
be problematic, I think. That's my view. In a residential area, in a business area where you want to try to keep the lights down, I...
Do you have suggestions on how to approach it otherwise?
I'd have to think. No, I don't right now. I know creating a problem without a suggestion is not a good thing, but...
No, I think we've always tried to keep our ordinances straightforward and simple. You know, we've done that in several of the ordinances we've had. I think there is a problem. I think we all identify that there is certain problems in residential areas, and what we're trying to do is in the most efficient way manage those problems. And again, some, you know, I've seen 40-page ordinances. I've seen 40-page graffiti ordinances too. And we may have been able to distill it down into a workable unit for the town of Cary Beach. So again, I would propose that we continue this item and we think about exactly the sort of things that you're talking about until the next meeting.
Can we agree to get a light meter and measure to see what point we're at?
I'll order a light meter next week.
Okay. All right.
You're going to need it.
All right. So anyway, I've made a motion to continue the item. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Is there any further discussion? Again, I want to thank the town attorney for the P&Z attorney for doing a tremendous amount of work on this. So it's great.
We discussed, and that'll be in your agenda back next month. I think we'll talk about what the 0.5 changes look like.
Okay, great. All right, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, excellent. We are on new business. Is there any new business? I think that's. We still have a couple other ones. Prohibited uses. Again, on the back of our packet here, there's kind of prohibited uses. Do we want to continue this item?
Because I want to make sure I clarify something here.
Okay.
I made a long list of additions that I did not add to the website or to the form, and my clarification is we have to list everything we want to be prohibited in the form, correct?
Right. At least in a broad definition, because that's the new law now, that if it's not prohibited, it's allowed. Yes.
Right. So, I mean, in the residential zoning, we already had barbershops and hair salon. So in addition to that, we'll see a nail salon, massage parlor. And
this is a hair saloon. It's a,
it's a hair saloon.
Hair salon.
Me.
Okay. We're getting late into the evening, yeah. Aren't we? And
billboards are not allowed anyway under our sign ordinance.
Right. Too, so I have put some effort into this because we'd been pushing it off. I just wanted to make sure that was what the direction was before I went and added 20 different items
right
to the list. So
yes,
it okay.
Is. And remember, if somebody disagrees with the item, they're just going to put a question mark by it. So we can, because we agree with all of them, we don't need to discuss them.
Okay.
Right. And don't forget, legal's going to need to look at those things in detail to make sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
So with that said, I will. I agree with postponing this or deferring it until next month. That gives me time to add these items for you guys to look at them before the next meeting.
Motion to table.
Or continue.
We'll table continue.
Table, okay. All right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Underground utilities. This is just an informational.
Yeah, we talked to Tony John is going to go ahead and work and get the account number from Duke and the contact, and we'll go from there. Actually, Tony's going to, I talked to a underground utility contractor from Wisconsin who works in this area, their headquarters, and Tony's going to look to see if there's some local, more local individuals that we could talk to once we get the information from Duke. Anything?
No, it's, you know, we'll get the information, John, and get the ball up.
So the plan is still to have Duke provide us basic data, take that basic data to a contractor who designs and implements underground, and then have them give us an estimate.
But you got permission from the council to get an account number or whatever it was?
Yeah,
so that, so that's been
John
done, right?
Yeah, he's working that.
Okay.
He's working that.
I should already have done it.
He's working it.
Okay. All righty. Our last agenda item again is the resignation of our esteemed member, Mr. Bill Moore. Again, you know, we talked about that under the Historic Preservation Commission. But again, you know, I'm sorry to see you go.
Thank you.
And it is effective as of July 15th. We do have a mechanism for an alternate to be seated. Do we have to do the swearing in? At the August meeting, okay. We do have Kathleen here. Is that, everything's good with that? You want to become our permanent member?
Sure.
Okay.
That's why I signed up.
All right. And as well as for the historic?
Yes, I understand.
Okay. All right, good. The process then is that do we have to then put out applications and interview for an alternate?
We'll start advertising this month for the alternate.
Okay. All right, good. Any further discussions on that issue?
Well, what do we do for nomination of the vice chair? How do we handle that process?
We'll do that in August.
Yeah.
We'll do that in August. All right. Last item is to make sure that our August 5th meeting is okay with everybody, because, again, we're going to have a new member here. So is August 5th okay for everybody?
I may be asked to be excused. I have an elderly mother issue I may have to do in August.
Okay. Is there a better?
No, it's going to be all.
Okay.
I'm fine on the 5th.
Fine, because we do have to have a quorum.
Yeah,
we have to have a quorum.
Can we be able to call in?
Can we potentially be able to call in?
Probably not, because her phone, she's 94 years old.
Oh.
She doesn't have long distance. She doesn't have internet. I could probably go to one of the neighbors. I'll let you know. I'll see if I can work on that.
Okay.
But if I completely excuse you from that, I'd appreciate it.
All right. So we'll have our meeting on August 5th.
Thank you.
And is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Well, so shake your hand.